CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, folks. It's that time of the week again, and we have a semi-full studio this morning. Well, we have Lawrence. How's it, Lawrence?
Howdy, George.
And Martin.
How's it, George?
And Wandile.
Hi again, George.
How's it?
Not too bad.
I was fascinated by the way in which you put those headphones. Why is that?
You know, it's become a habit now, so...
It's like a DJ.
Yeah. It's like I don't know. I have no answer.
Spinning some vinyl.
So it's like got something to do with you, you know, not being claustrophobic or being claustrophobic. Or
I like to hear what's happening around.
Ah,
me, so.
Okay. You like the ambient noise.
Yeah, flight or flight.
Fight or flight. Interesting stuff. Right? Well, good morning. And in the automotive news this morning, a company by the name of Muriza Auto Company reveals their plan to bring the Iranian vehicles to South Africa, which is quite an interesting thing because do we have enough manufacturers in South Africa? Do we can we do with another one? Do you think this car is going to be successful, or is it going to just fade into the background, or is it going to take over where Hyundai may leave off? Because Hyundai is one of the most popular Korean cars in the market at the moment, right?
Well, I think the biggest problem that they have at the moment is what they've decided to call this car.
What?
You don't name a vehicle the Primate. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's just not on.
It's dumb. Yeah. That, and Martin and I were actually arguing about this off air. Do we really need another auto manufacturer?
Well, that was my point, you know. And again, it's not a manufacturer; it's an assembler.
Yes.
I mean, this is an Iranian car. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Says nothing about the origin of the vehicle. Yeah. It's purely. When you take into account South Africans as a whole, their brand bias, they see something new and they're like, nah.
Well, it was like Tata. When Tata hit the market, everybody...
And even now, 15 years on, people still avoid them like the plague.
What, Tata?
Unless their pockets are empty. And, you know, we have, I would say, a fair whack of manufacturers that are on the... So we call it the lower end of the scale. I don't want to say cheap, but you know, on the lower end of the.
Well, they're operating in a particular demographic in a particular
exactly.
market, which
do we
which
need
is always
another
needed.
One.
I don't think we really need another one, but South Africans also have this habit: if something is dirt cheap and it looks like good value at face value. Mm. We tend to buy them. I mean, just go witness.
And then sit with the problem 6 months later.
Yeah, but I mean, witness the crowds of
queues
and things. For
I think it was
I want
it
to
is.
See one. I want them to bring in a model. I want to see it. I want to touch it and feel it. And then I'll tell you whether that it's worth.
Because if it's halfway competent, it will sell.
Look, if it's anything like Haval.
Do you think pricing is going to be the main?
Yep. Pricing, yeah, well, pricing versus features will be the main driver. Yeah.
The main thing is entering in that that segment of the market. So just to be clear, the Muriza, how do you say it? Muriza.
Muriza.
Muriza. Muriza. Yeah, Muriza. Yeah. M-U-R-E-Z-A. The Muriza Auto Company will be launching the Prime 8. Now, it's not Prime 8 as in the primate in the jungle. It is Prime 8, P-R-I-M, with the number 8. So primate.
It's a play on words.
It's a play on words, absolutely. And it will be launched at Auto Mechanica this year at the end of September and will be assembled in Roslyn in South Africa. Now, I'm all for... You know, local assembly. I think it's a good thing because the automotive industry, as we know, it contributes 7% to our GDP. So, you know, competition is also good. So, you know, I hope that they bring to market a vehicle that the consumers love and that it's not just something that is going to fade into the distance at some point in the future. Let's see what happens. Don't know.
Well,
crickets. Next story is VW faces the first mass diesel lawsuit. What's wrong with me this morning? VW faces the first mass diesel lawsuit on its own home turf in Germany. So the car behemoth VW is to face the German court on Monday, which is today, as hundreds and thousands of owners manipulate of manipulated diesel cars demand compensation for years of the country's largest post-war industrial scandal erupted. What do you guys think about this? You know, what was interesting to me about this whole kind of eruption of this legal or this lawsuit is that in Australia, this lawsuit was paid off, for lack of a better term. So they settled the lawsuit in Australia. I don't think that's going to happen in Germany. Let's see what happens. But they say this thing's going to take years to unravel.
Yeah, I think VW's done some things in the background as well to sort of get people to shy away from the fact that this happened. You know, they launched a new logo. There's some new vehicles now. They're moving a lot into the EV space.
EV drive and everything else, yeah.
So I think they feel really guilty for what they've done. And now it's time to pay for...
Just to be clear and to, you know, put everybody in the picture. So what happened was the cars emitted a certain amount of carbon.
It was actually about the nitrous oxide emissions.
Well, the bad emissions that are coming out of the car.
Smog forming things coming out of a diesel startup. And Volkswagen, sorry, I'll just shorten the story
for you.
Volkswagen installed software where the car could actually detect when it was being tested. And then it activated all its emissions control things and it tested out squeaky clean.
Exactly.
But as soon as the car saw that it wasn't on the testing rig anymore, it liberated full power and went for fuel efficiency over low emissions.
So for layman's terms, as soon as the car detected that something was plugged into the car, testing equipment,
let's cover that.
Just for simplicity purposes, the car would act differently or react differently with its emissions. And this thing's become a big deal in Germany. And, you know, the powers that be within VW are being hauled into court. Some of the responses are, well, we didn't hurt any consumers.
That's a load of nonsense. They've actually done and run the numbers, and they reckon that the global emissions could be directly attributed to the death of hundreds of thousands.
Have they gone that far?
People.
Yes. Oh wow!
I think it's 11 million vehicles.
So. Yeah, 11 million vehicles, and it's cost them so far 30 billion euros.
That's a lot of money.
Pocket change for them.
That is in excess of 400 billion South African rand.
Yeah.
I don't think it's pocket change because the effects dropped their stock. I think it was half at one point to what it was a few years before that. So I don't think it's just pocket change in terms of the fine.
Not only that,
what it's done for VW.
We would have to see what happens in the courts in Germany, because if this was Australia, it was the US, it was Germany. I don't know if this thing has been settled in the US. It's basically every country where VWs are sold and that these cheetah cars were found, the people are well within their rights to take the company to court.
What I want to know is why aren't anyone else taking action against the other manufacturers who were subsequently tested and also found to be polluting? In fact, some of them were doing much worse than Volkswagen.
Yes.
Well, I think it's a case of hiding it, right? Having software in the vehicle that hides it. Do the other manufacturers have the same thing?
Yep.
Software that hides it?
It was actually developed by Bosch. So Volkswagen's basically taking the fall for a system developed by Bosch in Germany.
Taking one for the team.
Basically.
Well, we should just get electric cars, right, Martin?
Yes.
We'll solve this entire problem. Just get a flipping electric cars. Then more pain as at the pumps predicted in the wake of the Saudi attack. So you must have heard about the drone attacks on Saudi Arabia's, I never know how to say these things, Abqaiq oil refinery. And the rand and oil price seemed to be aligned towards a smaller petrol price decrease of around 11 cents a liter. But you know how we calculate fuel price increases and decreases in South Africa. It's always a lag. So, you know, it remains to be seen what this Saudi attack is effect it's going to have on our petrol price. Don't know at this moment. But at the moment, it doesn't look like it's having any immediate effect. But around the world, oil prices surged by initially almost 20%.
Yep.
As these attacks took place. Have you guys been following the story?
Yeah.
I have indeed. And it's all sort of gone back to normal again. They realized that what was basically driving the was people were afraid there's now
going to be more.
There's not going to be any more. There's going to be a shortfall. The OPEC nations just dialed up their output. There is no shortage.
But has there ever been a flipping shortage of fuel?
No. OPEC controls the tap.
Exactly. So, you know, I've always believed there is no shortage of oil. It's just a case of manipulating demand and supply so that you can get price in the right place.
That's why diamonds aren't
Diamonds aren't actually expensive, but okay, that's a completely
It's the same principle, right? So diamonds, control the supply, and then
you can manipulate the price.
Yeah.
What this does tell me, however, is that how small of a disruption it would take for the fuel price to simply double again. Because if this went up by 20%, as a result of a single drone strike.
It's kind of fishy. It's like it was planned or something. Let's drive the price up.
Exactly. So imagine what would happen.
Everybody get your tinfoil hats out.
Conspiracy theorists.
Hey, I'm just saying. Could have been Elon. Who knows?
Elon. Have you seen the BFR was announced?
I did not.
His new space shuttles.
It's called Starship, I think. Yeah. It's not called BFR anymore. It was launched over the last.
You know what BFR
launched
stands
as in off
for.
The ground, right? It was they had
unveiled.
Unveiled.
Coincidence.
Let's go with that. Yeah, let's go with that. It's big electric. It's big electric now targeting the
conspiracy theories.
Targeting the fossil fuel industry.
So I've always wondered, you know, what Toyota's game is, and you know, they don't have any electric cars in South Africa. You know, they've got a big electric drive, but here's an interesting one. They turned to hydrogen buses at the Marais sales flop. So what they're doing is, that the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games, they will be represented by Toyota's best bet for the acceptance of hydrogen power. So they're using buses with hydrogen power to ferry all of the guests and the contestants at the Tokyo Olympic Games. So then more than 1,000 buses are planned to be in partnership with, again, here's another word I can't say, Bakui. How do you say that name?
Bikey.
Photon Motor.
Wabaki.
According to people familiar with the project, it aims at making the most of the push by China to start adopting zero emissions technology. But Toyota's gone the route of hydrogen technology. What do you think of hydrogen technology? Do you think it stands a chance to give electric cars a go?
Until battery technology expands, it has the potential to be more viable as a means of energy storage, but then you run into the problems of storing hydrogen.
One of the most explosive gases on the planet.
Yeah. And it's not really something you can just refill as easily as plugging into a wall socket.
Yeah.
But doesn't hydrogen explode?
Yes. Yeah. And,
Ask Lindenberg.
Yeah. Look, they were pilot projects all over the world. The principal among them being the ones out in California. Where they proved that, yes, you could have a hydrogen filling station and you can probably do like 1,000 kilometers on a single tank of hydrogen.
That goes to show because,
and it's emission free.
Well, it's emission free, but I mean, let's look at some of the numbers.
Making and storing hydrogen, just, it's not. At this point, it's too expensive.
Well, the sales, in terms of that headline, the sales are flopping for Marais. Because Toyota sold fewer than 10,000 units in the first year, whereas Tesla sold 25,000 units of its all-electric Model S in the first year.
See, it helps if your car doesn't look like it was stalled in the dark by a blind man with a machete.
You're talking about the Toyota?
No, I'm talking about the Mirai.
Yes.
It's ugly.
It's as ugly as the truth. I mean, if you want people to accept or to adopt new philosophies and new technology, you should at least try and make the thing look appealing, which Toyota clearly didn't do there.
Well, talking about blasts, a hydrogen tank blast in South Korea that killed 2 people in May was followed by another one in Norway at a hydrogen station in June. So hydrogen still has this image of being dangerous, like you say. And it's still storage of fuel, storage of liquid or gas or...
Yeah. It actually goes further than that. I mean, you have to generate the hydrogen somehow.
Making hydrogen is expensive.
That typically happens through by means of electrolysis, where they physically split water into hydrogen and oxygen.
So I don't know. What do you think Toyota's trying to do here?
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. I thought they were kind of ahead of the curve in terms of
chasing their tails, man.
Yeah, I think they're trying to get a monopoly
in around the hydrogen
space. Yeah, and it's not really working out. So they're forcing it, you know, using the Olympics as a sort of a show. Mm. You know, look how hydrogen is so much better. But
if it was so much better, it would be what everybody is pursuing. Nobody's pursuing hydrogen. Everybody's not going after batteries. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I think the scalability of the electric car versus one manufacturer going after hydrogen is, for me, that doesn't sound like a good idea. But let's see what happens. Let's watch Toyota closely, see what they do with this. They're also into electric cars, so let's not take that off the table.
Yeah, there's that. And also, I mean, hydrogen fuel cell cars, yes, it uses a different way of obtaining the electricity to drive your electric motors. But at least it also helps with their development on electric drive systems.
Mm.
True.
So there's still some benefit to be gained from this.
They're just bypassing the battery effectively. That's what they're doing. Yeah. And maybe that's a short term gain in terms of developing their drivetrains, and to switch hydrogen out for batteries. Maybe it's not a hard thing to do.
Mm. We're just waiting for batteries to catch up, man.
Batteries will catch up as soon as solar systems catch up. Anyway, more space is needed for impound depots in Cape Town. Closer to home, the number of vehicles impounded across the city has increased considerably, necessitating the need for expansion of the vehicle pound depots in Cape Town. Now, the traffic services, in terms of the 2018-2019 statistics, revealed that a 22% increase in taxis being impounded and a 36% increase in the warrants of arrest and 10% increase in drunk driving arrests. These stats showed a 102% increase in the number of warrants executed year on year. So the number of transgressions in Cape Town have just soared.
Can I be honest here?
I want to say, sorry, okay, Martin. The transgressions have stayed the same. The enforcement of has increased.
Yeah.
I take my hat off to the cops in Cape Town. Those guys are saying, you know what? Cape Town's small enough. We don't need you. We don't need this. If you're not going to obey the rules, we're going to take away your car.
Yeah.
And I have seen the impound lots in Maitland and Nveni, and they are massive.
Well, yeah. since all of these arrests and the increase in enforcement, it seems that there's been a 4.6% decrease in overloading of vehicles. So something's working.
It's a good problem.
There's only one issue that I have here. Cape Town is notorious for impounding even slightly modified cars. So it doesn't matter that my little Toyota is more capable on road and safer to drive and everything else because of good tires and proper suspension and better brakes and everything else. It's not original, so it is unroadworthy, they say.
Well, we've had this debate before. Is somebody in their backyard capable of trumping the engineering power of a manufacturer?
An unequivocal yes.
Says the man in his backyard with an angle grinder. Sorry. But I
don't know if I agree with that.
I'm all for them, you know.
Who's them?
The cops.
Okay.
Look, when if you look at the pictures that accompany the story, and you look at the state of some of the vehicles that are in those impound lots, you're like, thank God that they've pulled that thing, and I hope it's going straight to a crusher because that thing isn't even worth it. You can't even send that to a scrapyard. There's nothing left of it.
But I mean, is the instances of modified vehicles
nowhere that near big?
So we're not talking about modified vehicles here. We're talking about
a problem. That enforcement is actually a bigger problem than you'd imagine.
What enforcement?
For unroadworthy vehicles.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But what I'm saying is non-standard vehicles, not like what percentage of the vehicles driving around in Cape Town are modified to be better, as you put it?
If these guys paid attention to the grabbing 1980 Toyota Cressida.
Yeah, that's not modification. That's not rebuild. Modification.
That is actually unroadworthy.
Yes.
And those are the ones that they're actually targeting.
No, they target everybody across the board.
Well, make the city safer.
Yeah, I think the law's the law, right? If you break it, then you have to be punished.
I don't know if you're suggesting, Martin, that
it's a money making scheme.
That this enforcement is a bad thing. I think it's a freaking good thing. Good on the cops. Go Cape Town.
And when you look at what they're impounding the vehicles for mainly is overloading.
Yes.
Dangerous driving.
And driving.
Driving into oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
In rush hour.
Well, there's been a decrease in overloading. There's been a decrease in people, using cell phones. There's been a, 18% decrease in negligent related arrests. I don't know what negligent related arrests
driving
are.
Into oncoming traffic, mounting pavements, crossing solid lines.
Well, there
these
we go.
Are basic rule
so
roads.
So those
cops,
are all good.
The cops are basically saying, we've had enough.
Stuff you. We're impounding your car.
If you don't want to drive according to the rules of the city, we're going to take your car away. And
can
we're going to go
can we hire
in
these cops in Joburg?
I wish. I mean, the thing is, Cape Town is small enough. And they don't have as many roads as we do.
There's 11 million people there.
Yeah, but it's a small, very, very compact city with two major freeways.
That all descend on the mountain.
Exactly. And the cops have just got that area to patrol and the linking roads in between. And they are saying, right, we're patrolling these roads. And if you're not going to drive properly, we're going to take away your car. And if you want your car back, it's going to cost you X amount. And if you don't come fetch your car in 24 months, it goes to a crusher.
Huh. With which I have no problem at all. It's just the broad strokes with which they apply their unroadworthy vehicle criteria.
Well, I think Martin.
This debate. Will
Martin is in, on the side of the modifiers.
Yes.
Yes. He's on the side of the need for speed.
I can promise you that a set of Bridgestone RE002s are better than Wing Road or whatever Chinese brand tires might appear legal.
Might appear legal.
Yeah.
Goodness me. Well, I need to just tell you, news just in. And that is that the price of 95-octane petrol will go up by 18 cents a litre, while 93 will cost 4 cents a litre less. The Department of Energy just confirmed.
25 cents per litre for diesel extra. Yuck.
That's hectic. So the Saudi attacks have affected us.
Well, it's getting to the point now where people are going, they can't argue for diesel anymore.
No, they can't.
Because diesel is now more expensive than petrol.
The October price adjustment will kick in on Wednesday, the 2nd of October, which is the day after tomorrow.
Yeah? Go and fill up.
Go and fill up. Go and fill your tanks to the brim, although you're not going to save much by just filling up with one tank.
Makes you feel better.
It does make you feel better. But, looks like 95-octane... will be R16.21 a litre inland and R15.57 a litre at the coast. Well, what else can we do? We just have to suck it up. Yeah.
Go electric.
Yeah, I'll get electric.
Get an electric car.
Every week I come and I'm just like, I need one. More and more.
Every week I come and I think I need a bike.
Well, let's move on to our next story, and that is our Auto Talk segment. And today we will be reviewing the Ford Ranger Wildtrak, which apparently is better than the Raptor, Martin says.
It's not necessarily better, but it's definitely not 110,000 Rand worse.
Hmm.
Because that's the price difference between this top spec Wildtrak and a normal, and a Raptor. There's more than 110,000 Rand price difference between them. And I just don't see how that's actually worth it. Especially when the Wildtrak is as accomplished as it is. Like Lawrence said when he tested the Raptor, said, it's nice, it's great, but it's probably not really worth the money.
Yeah, you're basically buying boot factor and...
Boot factor.
Boot factor.
Boot factor. That's like ice cream.
Yeah.
Ice cream, yeah.
No, it's basically when you buy the Raptor, you're buying that really, really fancy suspension system that you're never going to use and a sticker pack. What is the Wildtrak? It's a sticker pack.
An awesome sticker.
For 100 grand.
The Raptor is 100 grand more.
Oh, wow.
So I would say if you are in any way looking at some sort of a double cab, don't waste your money on a Raptor.
Okay, well, let's hear about the Ford Ranger Wildtrak from Martin.
All right, so it looks pretty much exactly like the one we've grown accustomed to since 2015, over the last 4 years. Cosmetically, there's almost no difference, but this Wildtrak uses the same drivetrain, the same engine, the same gearbox as the Raptor. So you get all the goodness of the new downsized 2-liter engine. And cheaper. You get the benefits of the new 10-speed auto box.
Just tell me, does it have leaf springs in the back?
Yes.
When are they going to get away from this?
Well, the Raptor has coil springs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the only mainstream Bucky out there with coil springs at the moment is the Nissan Navara. And of course, it's X-Class offshoot.
Softer ride, right?
More controlled and better, more compliant ride.
And it's independent suspension.
No. Not independent. Still a solid beam rear axle.
Oh, okay. So the coil springs make hardly any difference. It's just slightly softer, but you have to have independent suspension and coil springs in order to get the benefits of stability.
Yeah, but then you can't load it as much as you could anymore.
Who loads those double cabs with anything?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. And if I look at this Wildtrak test car, it had I think 16,000 kilos on the clock, and the bin liner was still completely unscratched.
Well, it is a test car.
Well, true.
Well, we're not supposed to be running around loading bricks, Martin.
Anyway,
well, that little outhouse that Martin built over the weekend.
Yep. Ford. No. Look, inside it's still exactly the same as it was. You do, however, get a new infotainment system, Ford Sync 3, with smartphone mirroring and all sorts of other things. But what really impressed me here is the safety kit, the driver assistance kit that you get with the Wildtrak spec. And you get most of this with an XLT as well.
And in the Ranger, the Raptor.
And obviously in the Raptor as well. So you have adaptive cruise control and lane keeping assistance and blind spot monitoring and all these wonderful modern, new, or let's call it large car features.
Does it look like a Bucky inside? Because when you guys reviewed the Mercedes-Benz X-Class, the one thing I remember was it doesn't look like a Bucky inside.
Yeah, it feels like a Merc.
Yeah.
Well, and,
what is the...
The Wildtrak still looks like a Ranger inside.
Okay.
But it has some soft touch stitched material on the dash top and on the door trims. Oh, and it's got black leather trims.
It's starting to feel less like a workhorse and more like a car.
Yeah. And if you look at all the electronic display units inside as well, they're all configurable and you can literally control everything from the steering wheel. So there are some general improvements which basically filters down to the rest of the Raptor, to the rest of the Ranger range as well. But actually, I don't think you need to go to a Raptor because you get the same gearbox with the same engine, same power output, and even better performance and lower fuel consumption with the Wildtrak. You ran your Raptor at 10.6 liters per 100, as I recall.
Yeah, that was freeway driving.
Yeah. Well, I returned this one with 9.6 liters after a week of general use.
Oh, well done.
1 liter per 100 less.
The better.
Which is what? Just under 10%.
Keeping in mind that the Raptor was running on 20-inch wheels with big knobbly tires.
And this one was running on all-terrain tires, but more street-biased and only 18-inch in diameter.
Which does affect fuel consumption. Yeah. What does this thing cost?
692,900. But it's only a 700,000 rand back.
3.2 liter V6.
Nope, 2 liter twin turbo, 4 cylinder.
Oh.
157 kilowatts and 500 newton meters. It does deliver the goods, but the Raptor or the Ranger is still a very, very heavy thing. 2.2 tons curb weight.
Wow.
Give or take 20 kilograms or so. So it's still very heavy. Fortunately, the engine has a lot of torque and the gearbox does keep it on the boil nicely.
Yeah.
The big thing is, 9.6 liters per 100 is still pretty heavy, but for a Ranger and for a Wildtrak, that is exceptionally economical because the 3.2 will battle to get into the tens.
So it does come with a 3.2 liter option.
As well, yeah. Okay. So that's the 3.2.
There are diehard guys out there that refuse to take the bi-turbo engine, saying, oh, well, it's smaller, so it's
only Coke and Amaroks. Only Coke, milk, and Amaroks come into this, and now Rangers as well. No,
that's coming from the boots.
Yes. Coke, milk. That is the boot factor.
Coke, milk, and?
And Amarok.
And Amarok. Come in 2 liter. That's a 21st century of, 1 liter brandy, 2 liter Coke, 3 liter Ford.
Yeah. Or 3.2 liter Ford. Now, the old 3.2 is still available with its old 6-speed auto, but this 2 liter is a genuine all-round improvement. And if you look at the price penalty, it's only about 30,000 rand for a vastly more refined, much more economical, much nicer to use drivetrain.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I don't think you should even consider a Raptor unless you are very specific about going at 140 on a gravel road.
Yeah, if you're going Dakaring in your weekends.
If you go, if you take part in recreational Dakaring, the Raptor is the one to go for. But if you want most of the goodness, you might as well just stop at the Wild Track. But the smart money will still save another 110,000 rands by ditching one turbo, losing a bit of power and some of the frosting that you'd get with a Wild Track.
The sticker pack, you mean?
Let's call it that. And rather buy a Ranger single turbo XLT 4x4. It's 95% as good for only about 80% of the price.
Which equates to 500 and?
It's just over 500,000.
Just over 500,000 rand. Well, there you go. Half a million rand, Bucky. And sounds like it's pretty capable for
a leaf front Bucky.
For tar driving.
Well, objectively, it's very hard to fault this. It does everything a Bucky's supposed to, and it does it all well. And it does some car stuff as well, so you can use it. My only real gripe with this, and it's the Ranger in general, it's just too big and too heavy. It feels cumbersome when you drive it. You can relate.
Yeah, pretty
You're
much.
You're always aware of this thing's size. And it's
I mean,
white.
I drove the Everest in Botswana through the Okavango Delta, and honestly, it is exactly what Martin said. You are aware of all times
of how big
just
it is.
how big it is. Because the Everest and the Wild Track are essentially the same thing.
Other big cars.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're going the route of America. Bigger is better. Cars are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I think it might be a safety thing. You know, it could be a
perceived safety thing
because you're higher up. Although with less power, you're less safe because you can't use it as a getaway car.
Well, on that point, this Ranger is possibly one of the safest buckets you can get out there at the moment. 5-star Euro NCAP, and it scored that rating in 2012 already, pre-facelift.
Interesting.
Mm. 7 airbags, stability control, every single safety gadget you can wish for is there. All the three-letter acronyms, they're all there. So,
A to Z in safety.
Yes, we're talking about the 700,000 rand bucky, but all things considered, it's starting to look like good value.
Lovely.
Believe it or not.
Well, good value, and thank you, Martin, for the review. If you want to go and have a look at the review that Martin did on the new Ford Ranger Wildtrak, just go to autotrader.co.za and go and search for the 2019 Ford Ranger 2-liter bi-turbo 4x4 Wildtrak, and you will find it under the reviews. Now time for a brand new segment called Industry Talk, and here's where we talk about everything in the automotive industry. And the first piece of news is body types. And consumers, believe it or not, besides searching make and model first as their primary search entry point into looking for vehicles, the second most popular way to search is by body type. So our data revealed at Autotrader that there have been 4 million searches for SUVs when make and model are not selected. So that's coming into the search journey and searching body type only. So car dealers can focus on body type as part of their stock holding because consumers are looking for body types.
That's exactly what I did when I decided to buy a car a few years back. I knew I wanted an SUV. I didn't know which one.
Yes.
So I started looking at mid-size SUVs and eventually settled on my Tucson. That was how I searched. I didn't go, okay, I want a Hyundai Tucson, and started searching for those. That's how I found my car, through Autotrader, believe it or not, which I bought before I started working here.
Well, this type of search, believe it or not, happens in 33% of the cases. A third of searchers enter the search journey using body type.
Yeah, they know they want a sedan. They know they want a hatchback. They don't care what
they don't know which one,
but that's what they want.
Yeah.
Which means that, in my mind, this is brand agnostic. You're not really too worried about the brand as a consumer, whether it be a BMW X5 or whether it be a Land Rover Discovery. As long as you're searching for an SUV, you're going to make your choice based on that 33% of the time.
It's the rim of the funnel, if you want to call it that.
The rim of the funnel?
Yes. They come in at the top. They say, I know I want an SUV.
Yes.
And then they fall down the sides and, okay, well, I want that kind of SUV. Mm. All right, I'm going to get a Volkswagen. All right, I want a Volkswagen Tiguan. All right, now I want a Tiguan with leather seats and a sunroof.
Exactly.
And down the funnel they go until eventually they find, they narrow down their search to three or four cars.
Yeah.
Boom. Boom. Start doing, go and see the dealer.
Well, in today's world, the shortlist is one or two cars, no longer three or four cars.
Yeah.
So one or two cars, and then they go and they see the dealer. And then of all body type searches, single and double cab buckies generate the highest search volumes. So we're just talking about the Wildtrak. Single and double cab buckies, believe it or not, generate the highest search volume across all of these body type searches.
And the numbers are quite staggering. I mean, if you look at the five most searched for double cabs, Toyota Hilux, almost 1 million searches.
Mm. Exactly.
And the Range is 820,000, so it's not that
Amarok,
far behind.
Navara, exactly. It's scary.
It's scary, scary stuff that, that South Africans love SUVs and South Africans
adore Buckies.
Yeah. There's no doubt in the data that that's actually the case. So car sellers can confidently probably, you know, hold the prices up of those cars that are searched for the most. And in this case, Toyota Hilux, Buckies, and SUVs fit that mold. VW dominated with 3 out of 5 cars in the hatchback category.
Polo.
Polo Golf. Takes the cake.
Yeah.
Polo, and at least Golf one car represented in the top 6 of body type search categories, except for the coupe category, which, you know, I think only the Scirocco fits.
Yeah, but the Scirocco's been out of production for the last.
But it's still in the second-hand market, right?
No, it is.
Yeah, it's still in the second-hand market. But I don't think VW has a coupe other than the Scirocco.
Not at the moment. Yeah. Not a real coupe.
Why did that Scirocco fail?
Did it fail?
It didn't
really.
Too close
to the GTI.
Didn't really, but I mean, if you want to explain to someone you drive a Volkswagen Scirocco, they say, oh, what?
Why didn't you buy a GTI?
Why don't you just buy a GTI?
Or a Golf R?
Does it go over par, I think, is the most important question.
It goes. What?
Does it go Vrpa?
Vrpa.
And if it doesn't, no. Then I'm getting a Golf.
Does it go Vrpa? I think it's my favorite word, Vrpa. The Kia Rio was the third most searched for a hatchback, but did not generate enough volume to make it into the top 10. And Kia Rio is quite a nice car. I like the little Kia Rio. For brand search for in South Africa, and despite the BMW X5 not being on the top 5 SUV list, our data reveal that the consumer attention seems to be shifting to the X5 over the last 4 months. So, you know, dealers can now begin, in my opinion, looking at the X5, depending on what area they're in, and stock the X5 because consumer attention seems to be shifting to the X5.
Especially as the new X5 will now start reaching the used car market as well.
That's a good point.
Always just make sure that it's still under maintenance plan.
Yes.
And then in more industry news, a looming strike could cripple the motor industry and fuel availability. So it seems like there's a bit of a deadlock between the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa and the Motor Industry Bargaining Council, and the CCMA seems to be mediating between the two. And there seems to be a bit of a deadlock in that the two parties aren't getting anywhere, which means that they're threatening to go to strike.
It has been a little bit over 2 years. I think we're actually closer to 4 years now. I remember they avoided the last one about 2 years back.
Mm.
So the
unions vowed that this the fight would intensify and that they will they have arranged for formal conciliation on the 30th of September, which is today, under the auspices of the CCMA. And we are currently negotiating the picketing rules as part of the preparation for that meeting. If conciliation fails, then we will be within our rights to request a strike certificate for an industry-wide shutdown. This affects filling stations, car dealerships, and the automotive industry at large.
Let's hope it doesn't happen.
I can't see it getting to that point.
Yeah.
I think we're smart enough as a nation to know that
strikes don't necessarily always get the outcome that they want economically.
Let's just say, for example, they want 12%, industry says 7%, they're going to settle on 8%. It happens. Here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
Well, I hope it doesn't come to a strike.
Well, this isn't just about the pay package. It's also about working conditions.
I don't know what your sense is, but my sense is that strikes hurt the economy more than it helps. You know, so I suppose the point is strikes hurt the economy more than the settlement or the negotiation or the settlement in the negotiation does, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Because if industries grind to a halt, everybody hurts. Which isn't what we want. So moving on from that to our crazy talk segment. And in our crazy talk segment this morning, woman arrested after driving off with a cop clinging to the bonnet. I mean, this story's been doing the rounds.
Yeah, I saw the video.
Can I say it?
Say it.
Freaking West Rand.
Did this happen in the West Rand?
Yes, on Robert Broom Drive, just outside Krugersdorp. 23-year-old woman refused to listen to the instructions of a
cop.
At a roadblock.
She was talking on her cell phone. She was talking on her cell phone, and the cop stood in front of the car, and she decided to drive off when the cop hung onto the bonnet. Why the cop hung onto the bonnet, I don't freaking know.
Well, George, if you see the video, it's hilarious, because the cop is laying on the bonnet with her book, writing the ticket out while this woman is driving down the road.
No.
Yes.
Still writing the ticket out.
Yes. That's what was so funny and why people thought it was hilarious. Honestly believe this woman got her just desserts. I think she should have a driver's license taken.
Yeah. I think she's absolutely in the wrong, and it's right that she's got arrested. But it's freaking hilarious that the cop continued to write out the ticket while.
Yeah.
I mean, the car wasn't going slow if you watch the video.
It's moving now.
Yeah.
No, it was moving. So this thing went viral on social media and has done the rounds. I think it's absolutely hilarious. But lady, you don't drive off when someone's standing in the front of your car unless they've got a gun pointed at you.
I see. On top of using a cell phone while driving, fine, she was arrested for failing to comply with the instruction of a traffic officer, reckless driving, and resisting arrest. So instead of a fine, she ended up...
It could have been a lot worse. They could have given her attempted murder.
Yeah, that's true.
That's also true. Yeah. Yes, you try to kill a cop.
On a cop as well, yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. I watched a video over the weekend with American police. And they pulled a car over. After putting the car over, the policeman said, "Can I see your documents, please?" The guy refused. He said, "Why do you want to see my documents?" He said, "Because this is a routine check." He refused to give him the documents. He says, "Under the law, I can arrest you if you don't produce your documents." He says, "I'll produce my documents once you tell me why I need to produce my documents." And so they had a standoff. And the cop did the right thing. He called for backup. He said, "I've got somebody resisting a routine search." Three other cops pitched up, and they hauled this person out of the car violently.
Yeah, and then they tased his ass.
And they did tase him. You probably saw the same video. Yes. They tased him. They handcuffed him, and they arrested him. Don't mess with cops,
especially in the States.
No, I think it's right. You know, you comply with the law, or why do they need to be nice?
Well, it goes a long way, but...
No. What I mean is, be nice until you break the law. And then I'm not saying then, you know, cops should abuse people, but at least, you know, if there is a show of I'm serious, then would-be criminals won't try their luck with the cops. I mean,
if you haven't done anything wrong as well, you have nothing to...
Then you reach over.
You give them the documents.
You produce your registration, and your insurance and registration and your license. The cop's going to take a look at it, go to his little computer.
Check you out.
Check out. Make sure that you've got no outstanding warrants. We'll come back to you and tell you, right, I pulled you over because you got a busted tail light.
Yes.
And I'm going to write you up a $20 ticket to have it repaired, or I'm going to give you a warning.
Exactly.
And 9 times out of 10, and I have a lot of friends in America who will tell you the exact same, be nice to them, they'll be nice to you, and 9 times out of 10, they're going to let you off with a warning.
Exactly. So if you're nice to the cops, they're nice back. But if you become arrogant and all stuck up and just be a jackass,
they're going to tase your ass.
Why shouldn't they be able to tase your ass? I mean, I saw another video where this poor cop was by himself, and pulled a taxi over, and the taxi started getting arrogant and violent with him to the point where he pulled his gun out. Obviously, he wasn't going to use it. Somebody was recording this entire thing. Yeah. He had to call for backup because his life was in threat. No. We shouldn't be abusing our police officers, I'm afraid.
Welcome to America.
Now, well, in South Africa,
except
too.
This one was in South Africa.
Second story. Ford says 42% of Americans believe that electric vehicles require petrol to run.
Well, that doesn't really surprise me. I think 40% of Americans also believe the Earth is flat and that vaccines cause autism.
Where did they do the survey? I'd like to know. If it was in the southern states, I would sort of understand.
Well, You know, the thing is, funny thing about the Americans, you know, Americans are most of them are good people, but they have this thing in America called the World Series in baseball.
Yeah, they're the only ones.
They're the only ones that play.
Yep.
So it wouldn't surprise me 42% of Americans believe that electric vehicles require petrol to run.
It just goes to show you where the education about
EVs is,
EVs lays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all jokes aside, and this is a funny piece, but it shows you that the consumer still hasn't been communicated with. And we're putting all these EVs out on the road, and maybe the manufacturers and the assemblers should do a better job of communicating.
And the people should do a better job of listening.
Well, Martin's on the controversial side today.
Yep.
Yeah, I could be ignorant as well.
He was silent across the entire policeman talk.
It could be ignorance. It could just be like, you know, I don't know what EV stands for. I'm not going to find out. And I like my Ford truck.
I'd also like to know who they surveyed.
Yeah.
Because so, if they were talking to young people, they'd know.
Yeah.
If they were talking to older generation, they'd be like, EV, what's that?
What's that?
What's an EV?
What's an EV? Well, onto
Pokemon.
Onto another story. Thieves go out. They steal a classic Mustang. That has just been restored. So this guy spent $50,000 fixing this car into pristine condition. I mean, everybody knows what a classic Mustang looks like and what it's worth. They used the car, because of its rigid chassis, to ram into a shop in Greece in Athens to go and steal PlayStations.
Strike two.
Huh? For the love of the game.
I mean, they could have freaking just sold the car. Why would you want to go steal PlayStation?
It's the reason nobody steals classic cars, because they are classic for a reason, because they are very rare.
Easy to find.
And easy to find and easy to track down. And unless
it's crashed into a flipping PlayStation store.
Unless it's been turned into midnight spares, you can't resell a classic car, because the community is that small. Yeah. Everybody will know exactly who it belongs to.
Exactly. Yeah, also maybe these thieves were smarter than we think.
Also, they thought a 67 Ford Mustang as a rigid chassis.
It's made out of wet spaghetti.
Yes.
Well, I think the point is that they take these cars because they're old, and their assumption is that the chassis is solid.
I think they take them because they're old and they're easy to steal. Security in those days were...
You could start the thing with a teaspoon.
You could start it with a teaspoon.
Point. That's a good point. Don't ask me how I know that.
Okay, and then next crazy talk is the skeletal remains of a man missing nearly 22 years ago is found in a submerged car. Now, this was reported by somebody in Palm Beach, Florida, who noticed the car just off the water's edge 22 years later. But this image, if you go and have a look at it, and we'll tweet it, this image has been visible on Google Earth since 2007. Now, it's reported that the man was identified. His skeletal remains was identified and recovered from the car submerged in a retention pond in a densely populated residential area. The man's been missing for 22 years, and the vehicle was near the water's edge, and been on Google Earth since 2007. So this resident alerted the police on the 28th of August last month after spotting the submerged vehicle behind his home in Moon Bay Circle in Wellington. The police confirmed his findings and said that the vehicle was heavily calcified and appeared to have been under the water for a long time. And then they positively identified this guy. Now, according to the National Missing Persons Department, Mr. Malt, who is the deceased in the car, left a nightclub alone at around 11 the night before he was reported missing. He did not appear to be intoxicated when he left, although he had reportedly had a couple of drinks. He'd called his girlfriend from the bar at around 9:30 p.m. to say that he'd be home soon. And that was the last contact anybody heard from him. The housing development that the car, or the little dam that the car, retention dam that the car was found in, was reportedly under construction at the time and had tight cul-de-sacs and winding loops. So who knows? He might have been drunk, driven into this little lake and drowned.
At least they found him. I mean, imagine being the family after 22 years.
Exactly.
That's going to definitely...
The problem there is he doesn't have family or friends, and that's why nobody missed him.
Well, he had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
He had a girlfriend.
Or maybe just maybe he was in a classic Ford
Mustang.
Actually,
sounds like an episode of Bones.
Yeah. Or maybe he was in a classic Mustang, which saw some pedestrians and went off and
don't crowd control.
And then very lastly in our crazy talk segment is can you fit a coffin in a Ford? The 10 weirdest and funniest questions that used car buyers ask used car dealers. If you thought that buying a used car is straightforward, then think again. Car dealers have put forward some strange requests that people they're trying to sell the car to have asked them. And some of those strange requests are, can a coffin fit in the back of this Ford?
Can it?
Yeah, I don't want to hire a hearse.
Ford Mondeo.
And my uncle died, so, yeah, you know.
It's Mondeo Estate shop.
Yeah, well, I think they actually used Mondeos as the base for a couple of hearses.
It could have been. Oh, it could have been. Well, one customer apparently pitched up a dealership and asked to check if he could check if his dog liked the car before he committed to buy.
Some people listen to their dogs.
How do you know your dog likes a car?
Well, I mean, I spoke to my cat about it last night and we laughed.
Well, some of the top 10 strangest questions besides the coffin and the dog was, can you make this a left-hand drive? I mean, huh?
My best one is, can you deliver it to Australia? And that's actually something I've encountered on Ask Auto Trader.
I was just going to say, Martin, because you actually run Ask Auto Trader for us, and I bet you have seen some ringers in the last 2 years.
Can you export this car? And then they'd send me a link to the ad for this car. Can I export this car to Indonesia?
If you pay for it.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah,
exactly. The fourth most asked question is, would you take animals or property as payment and not money?
Is he from Alaska?
Or Florida.
And then the fifth most asked question, can I check that whether the chassis number is lucky?
That actually does make some sense to me.
Why?
Some Eastern cultures attach specific values to numbers. And they might be able to decipher some kind of luckiness or unluckiness from a car's chassis number.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's true.
It's true.
So another question is, can you put the seats down so I can see if I can sleep in it? Buying a house.
Well, you know, you can sleep in your car. You can't drive your house.
Yeah, so. I mean, I'm yet to see a house on the N1.
And then finally, can you please fill it with balloons and put a bow on it?
I mean, this happens quite often. When you buy a new car, sometimes the dealerships will put a bow on it. And make a huge hurrah. So
ring a bell. Ding, 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 ding. It happens.
Can I take my 80-year-old wife for a test drive to scare her? Dude, I think you can probably take your 80-year-old wife for a test drive in anything and it'll scare her. Because if your wife is 80 years old, chances are you're 85.
Exactly. Or, well, you never know in today's day and age. True. But that brings us to our grid talk segment. And we have the one, the only, Wandile Sishe in studio to take us through yesterday's Grand Prix and the one before that, for that matter.
Yeah.
The Russian and Singapore Grand Prix. How did you find it?
Racing's back. That's all I can say. I was actually telling somebody at work yesterday that if Ferrari could get another pole position at Russia, Mercedes are in trouble. And everyone in the grid should be, you know, should be worried, because that just means that we're back to racing, and we are.
Well, yesterday one dealer texted me and said anything can happen. Anything happens.
Anything happens.
It was a good race. Singapore, Ferrari, you know, managed to clinch the 1-2, after some great, strategy that the team did. So Russia, you know, Mercedes needed to respond, to the threats of Ferrari finally coming back to the party. And they tried and they couldn't. But fortunately, Vettel, you know, had some issues with his vehicle, and the strategy finally came through for Mercedes, and we managed to take the win.
Do you think they turned up the engine mode on that car, and that's what broke that MGUK?
I think so. I think that's a pretty good, because you saw him on that.
He was lightning fast.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, you managed to take two cars.
Yeah,
off a slipstream in one corner.
So, what is your take on that? On that start, do you think that Leclerc had? You know what? Before we get to your take on that start, my opinion changed in that Leclerc became my favorite driver.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last two races, he has slipped back into number two spot, and Vettel is taking back his spot in my mind.
And he's taken it back. He hasn't even asked for it. He's taken it back
because Leclerc has shown his immaturity.
He's absolutely shown his immaturity.
I thought that he was going to be another Lewis Hamilton. I thought he was going to have his head screwed on right. I thought he was going to take things calmly. Yesterday, his little shit fit in that car.
I don't know what's going on with Ferrari as well. I don't understand why they deserve, why, you know, they should give Leclerc his position back, because Vettel fought for that position. He earned it.
Of course he did. He took that flipping first corner. Yeah. He didn't get given it.
So that was a bit shocking for me. But other highlights for me was Albon, another fifth.
No, that he should go.
Albon?
Really?
You reckon?
No, they put him in the car. They threw Gasly out and put Albon in. Oh, yeah. I'm thinking he's... And he's, you see where the constructors and how quickly he has moved up. The driver standings.
He's absolutely amazing, that kid.
I'm thinking of Gasly.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Gasly should definitely go.
Yeah.
You know, a few weeks ago we were talking about the prediction, and something else I want to highlight is the fact that Hulk doesn't have a seat unless he goes to Williams, at Renault, which is kind of sad for me. It sucks to see good drivers, leave, and he did okay this week, and I don't think he should be, you know, forced to only have a seat at Williams.
And I think Ricciardo should never have left Red Bull.
Yeah, that too. But Albon, I think, is filling that seat well. For now, at least. It's kind of early. But, I mean, four races in a row and you score fifth.
But if you think about it, Ricciardo had car trouble when he was at Red Bull. Really good outbreaker. Really, you know, I think he's in the top 10 in terms of driver capability. But he's always got car trouble.
Mm.
So he had car trouble with Red Bull. He's got car trouble now.
He drives the cars until they break.
So maybe he's breaking the freaking cars. Yeah.
I think that's possibly it. And I'm sure Christian Horner is just smiling because, yeah, Renault has been so hard on them, so tough on them, and finally they're getting some luck their way. So kudos to Red Bull. Kudos to Ferrari as well. Honestly, I'm glad to see that they're back.
I would like to make a request. Can we find out how many more races Hamilton has to win, or how many more points he has to score before it becomes mathematically impossible for anybody else to beat him in the championship race? And that should be within the next two to three races.
Yeah. All right, Mexico. Mexico will be the kind of the nail in the coffin. Yeah.
Next race.
Next race, the constructors can be decided.
So far ahead.
They've run away with it, and who knows? Who knows? But I'm really excited for next season now at this point, because it's the last time we'll be having the current formula that we have, and Ferrari's finally come to the party. So,
I'm absolutely stoked that racing is back. I think of the last two races, Vettel has caught a wake up.
Mm.
His head seems to be in the right place. He definitely took that lead yesterday. You know, Leclerc, you're a baby.
Well, I actually did watch a small little video about why Ferrari is all of a sudden in the space of, you know, after the break, has the cars become so fast. They basically added six little winglets to the floor of the car.
To the front wing, yeah, and the front wing as well.
Two winglets to the front wing and six winglets to the floor of the car on the side by the pods. And that is just, it's just changed the car.
It's made a world of a difference, yeah. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Well, that's it, folks. That's the end of our show for today. Hopefully Ferrari, from my perspective, continues with their wins. From Wendelia's perspective, probably not. I still have a lot of respect for Lewis Hamilton. I think he's one of the best drivers on that track, because his head is just in the game. Until next time, cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.